Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. Also, you are going to be following me, or excuse me, you're going to be listening to the podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. Lord Gaul was my name when I first got introduced to the sport. That's what I used on K1 USA and Kakutugi and K1 Fans and all the other websites that I first started at. Definitely want to say a shout out to those people who've been following me from the way back. But the other very, very, and probably the most efficient way to listen to the podcast show is by simply going to iTunes and entering Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine. You can also enter Lord Gaul into the search engine, and my show pops right up. So I'm going to go ahead and get into some news. First, of course, we're going to go ahead and do a breakdown of the Glory card. We will go ahead and go top to bottom, and we'll talk about the main event. Main event being Robin van Roosmalen as he gets a victory over Andy Risty. In this card that I predominantly picked wrong, I chose Andy Risty because Andy Risty, when he's violent, when he goes for it, when he lets the aggression go, he scores at really weird angles. And what I mean by it is, as I was trying to talk about, as I was discussing in the preview show that we did, sometimes he'll do a very Lucien Corbin style thing of firing his right knee and then putting a right hook behind it. He can generate a lot of power with it. He can also do the a switch knee with the left side and then put his left hook behind it. And he plays with different variations like that. He'll go high kick, the step up knee. He's got really good timing. He has a really good understanding of space. When he does those things, but throws with the kind of violence that got him the win over Kai Hollenbach, and the Kai Hollenbach win, like that hook was just, he stuns him with what really is a short hook jab kind of variation, and then he cleans it up with the next shot. That type of style of guy is very, very tough to beat, in particular for Robin van Roosmalen, who likes to get the combination and kick flow going. But Andy fought from the opening bell. He fought like he was preparing himself to go five rounds, trying to do enough in each round to win the early rounds. Robin van Roosmalen, 100% confident that he could fight for five rounds. Not only did he fight for five rounds, Robin van Roosmalen was throwing bombs for five rounds. So he had somewhat of a kickboxing flow early in terms of he still looked to mix the kicks in here and there. But really, it was the hands that were the difference for Robin van Roosmalen, who really stood in the pocket, really exploded well. And when it got to rounds four and five, when Andy Risty had gotten tired and Robin van Roosmalen, you know, took over the fight, scored two downs in the fourth round, Robin van Roosmalen was throwing absolute heat. He, who is very much a predominant, you know, or a guy who's more known for a wonderful, absolutely beautiful kickboxing style where he mixes the hands up and the low kicks, he was throwing just heat. Like, not that he was just boxing for the last two rounds. He was throwing kill shots for the last two rounds. He was literally trying to, you know, throw world enders and get Andy Risty out of there. And Andy Risty, to his credit and to his toughness, he didn't go. He kept getting up. The fourth round, he was out on his feet at times. But all he would do is that after he went down, he'd get right back up, put the gloves up, ready to compete. And he went the distance. So definitely, shout out to Andy Risty for his toughness. He's a very good fighter. He's an elite fighter. This happens. And he's got a win over Robin van Roosmalen. And now Robin van Roosmalen has a win over him. There's a reason why I think kickboxing, which is very much to me a rematch sport, these guys got to meet several times. You know, you've got to have, when it's all said and done, you need to have a Ignashoff, Remy Bonjowski type, you know, record, where guys who fought five times, Remy had three, and I think Ignashoff won two. And what I mean by, the reason why I said I think, is because there was, Remy Bonjowski's camp always felt that there was some shenanigans around one of those wins, and he felt like he should have had that, so he thought that it should be 4-1. But it's 3-2 in favor of them. Five fights after it's all said and done, that's a good sample size. You know what I'm saying? And I've mentioned, Iman Barlow on the show, a female fighter from out of England. And right now there are some elite girls at the top. And I would love all those elite girls to fight each other several times. You know, I want, you know, Iman, and eventually one day she's going to fight Tiffany Von Soest. I don't want to happen once. I want it to happen like four or five times. Like, I want that sort of thing to happen for the top, for the elite. And it's good that this happened. And it kind of segues into what happens in the tournament final with Simon Marcus, who's now going to be going against Artem Levin again. That's going to be their second time going at it. You got to start building those sample sizes. That's what this sport's all about. We have never and never will be like MMA or like boxing in a way where there's like one person that's kind of holding the title and the next new young person comes up, takes the title, and then they hold it for a while and they only fight individuals, you know, once, and then maybe there's a gap. Very rarely do you see trilogies in boxing anymore. It's just not as common. And in MMA, you look at, you know, I truly believe that Ronda Rousey, for example, I think her best competition might be somebody that she's already beaten before, but it's not even on the table that she would have a rematch with some of these girls. In that way, you know, she has one rematch in it, but not since she's been in the UFC, she hasn't a rematch. What I mean by it, what my argument is for kickboxing is we've got to be us, and us is a history of fighting several times, sometimes several times in a year, and that will prove who the best, who the elite is over time. But really, we want to enjoy our athletes to the best, you know, so we want to see them perform at their best, so we want to be able to follow them. And Andy Risty and Robin Van Roosmalen fighting for this second time makes me excited about the fact that they could do it a third time. It could happen in a tournament. It could happen in a single fight. I want them to continue to fight. Also, Robin Van Roosmalen said that he proved that he's the best in the world at 154 pounds, 70 kgs. Got to see beat Petrosian, my guy. You know, Petrosian, unless he's, you know, not participating in kickboxing anymore, he's still the guy. And the loss that, you know, you can't play the math of, well, because I beat this guy and this guy beat this guy, I'm better than that guy. You can't do that. You know, I saw someone do a great breakdown the other day where they just kept connecting it all the way to the point where, you know, somebody would have a victory over Muhammad Ali, you know, thanks to just, you know, somebody 20 years after he was done fighting, you know, if you use that math of because this guy beat this guy. So I really like this performance from Robert Van Roosmalen. And not just that he won, but he won in such a way that if you watch him, you've now seen Robin Van Roosmalen fight a few times for the glory. Now you're going to follow this guy. Now you want to know what's coming up. Now you want to know what's happening with his career. Going to go ahead and go to the other title defense before I go into the tournament. Gabriel Varga wins a close decision over Masab Mirani. For me, the round, the swing round is the third round. And now the rounds were close. I liked Masab Amrani's work better in rounds one and two. I thought he did a good job of doing his usual scoring combinations. He didn't fade as much, and he was able to stay in the pocket, and he was able to continue to get offense. Varga definitely scored the low kicks, definitely scored with his distance and his step-up knees. I thought he did good stuff. But for two rounds, I thought it was Masab Amrani. That middle round, Gabriel Varga got going a little bit more in his combinations, a little bit more with his knees, and then his footwork kept him from getting hit as much. But I still thought Masab Mirani had a lot of really good moments, very close rounds there. Rounds four and five, even though Masab Mirani was having success offensively, he wasn't having any success defensively at that time. And the killer for Masab Mirani, this has happened his whole career, is his body language sometimes when he gets hit. So he's not even necessarily hurt, but the way he moves when he's tired or when guys are, you know, land particular shots on him, when his hands are down, he looks like, you know, almost like his body has become limp, but then he just gets upright before he threatens falling down. And it's happened before. And his best, most entertaining fight a lot of people bring up with Masab Mirani is clearly the fight with Moody Kamal. And the fight with Muhammad Kamal, same thing. His combination flow was there, you know, and both guys were in the pocket throwing good combinations and kicks at each other. But all of a sudden, as they went to round three, and in particular in round four, the extra round, Masab Mirani would just put his hands down and take shots and lean back, and body language makes it easy to go against him. So gave Varga the last two rounds, and I'm telling you, it really just comes down to that third round. That for me, that third round was a swing round. I had it a draw, so I would have called the fight a draw. But, you know, it's their first, you know, it's their first title since, you know, Yuta Kubo. So, of course, they had to, but there's got to be a winner there. One of the judges was 49-46 in favor of Gabriel Varga. And I'm not sure that reflected the fight that I saw. And maybe I'm wrong. I actually thought it, as I remember it, it might have been 50-46. But I can see how there were some close enough rounds where someone could have gotten that score off of, you know, going for the other guy on, you know, going for Varga in the close rounds. I've got no problem with it. Initially, I was like, I disagree with it, but I don't have a problem with it. And I do think that there's a difference. I just felt like I felt confident in what I saw in the five rounds. But if a judge, you know, who's watching it, you know, ringside, has got a different view, if he feels like Varga won those close rounds to the tune of 50-46, I guess I'd have to submit that to him. And the rounds weren't clear to the point where I could argue it. I just felt different. Going to go ahead and go into the tournament. Simon Marcus surprised me like no other. And the reason why I say that is I've always felt Simon Marcus had the athleticism and the ability to go into, 187 pounds, I believe it is. They're 85 or 86 kg weight class. I'm not sure what it is exactly. I've always looked at him as the guy, type of guy to have the potential to really excel at middleweight. I really thought that he has all the firepower. And he's got, you know, he looks the part. You know, he's one of those guys that looks good coming off the bus, you know, big ripped up guy. And I wondered if it would ever happen because he was so good in the clinch. When we did a breakdown of the show, first thing I said was, if this is full rules Muay Thai, without hesitation, Simon Marcus beats everybody in this field. I don't even have to think about it. And when I look at Simon Marcus and I look at how he came out and performed with Wayne Barrett, who I thought Wayne is a good mover, and I thought he was going to score, I thought he was going to be able to get in singles, and I thought that he would be able to avoid Simon Marcus's, you know, striking into his clinch. I thought Wayne was going to be able to outpoint him. Simon Marcus came out with a brilliant game plan of scoring a lot of power single kicks. Not a lot of combination flow, because that's kind of where he got caught in some of the fights. Fight China, he got caught with it. Basically, he just scored kicks. Big body kick, big low kick, big step up knee every once in a while. Really played the distance well. And when he committed to punching, he committed. He threw big, and when he missed, he made sure that him and Wayne Barrett got into the clinch. It was a good flow of both worlds. And the biggest thing, the most important thing that it was identity. He came out there and he said, this is who I am in this fight. As opposed to, in his full rules Muay Thai fights, I know who he is. He's a guy who's going to win with kicks for a while, but he's going to get in the clinch, and he's going to dominate you in a clinch, and he's going to suffocate your offense, and he's going to break you down with knees, and he's going to take it in the later rounds. And he's also a guy who's got some pretty good firepower. So if he has to throw, if he is down, he can bite down and throw back. And kickboxing, I never thought they had found his flow. Even in the fight with Schilling, you know, I thought that there was a moment where he was like, all right, I'm tired of, you know, figuring out these weird angles and the way that Schilling's moving and throwing at me. I'm just going to walk him into the corner and throw heat. And he did it, and he scored it down. That's how he got that second round. This was the first time where I watched Simon Marcus and said, here's the guy that can be a kickboxer and a full rules Muay Thai fighter. He just slowly picked Barrett apart. The kick slowed him down. Simon Marcus moved forward. In a fight of the year candidate, Jason Wilnes defeats Alex Pereira, and Pereira. Pereira and Wilnes really put on a show. There were downs, and Wilnes scored a down in the first. Pereira scored a down in the third, if I'm remembering correctly. The combination, kick flow was awesome. Wilnes definitely separated himself by scoring more with the low kicks. Alex, of course, definitely had his moments with the boxing. But Jason Wilnes, he just threw his combination of the kicks. He committed to them so much. And he definitely, a guy who's always looked on film as a guy who could punch pretty hard. But the results, he wasn't getting the KOs. It just hadn't happened. He was coming off the Wayne Barrett win. This was a good outing for him. This was a good victory for him. But if you're a fan and you watched it, you really, really enjoyed it. It's disappointing that this took place in Dubai, because it wasn't a huge crowd. And worse than not being a huge crowd, it wasn't a very interested crowd. You know, like, it wasn't a lot of cheers when the action. Musab Mirani and Gabriel Varga had some really crazy exchanges, and nobody was really moved by it. When Ruzmalin and Risti scored their down, when Ruzmalin scored down on Risti, the crowd didn't really go, you know, weren't really in awe when it happened. I didn't feel the passion from the audience. It could have been there. Maybe they didn't have enough people, but I just didn't feel it. This fight, Wilnes and Alex Pereira, it should have had more of a feel from the audience than it got. And that's why I'm hoping that they return and invest in Europe, they return to Japan. People who will immediately diagnose that this is something awesome. And I do think that that was what this fight was robbed of. Simon Marcus, Jason Wilnes in the finals. I just thought that Jason, because it's a tournament and attrition is part of it, Jason Wilnes had left too much in the earlier fight. Even if he had brought something with him, Simon Marcus had something for him. Because Simon, again, the step-up knees, his timing, he picked the right moment to throw punches. I thought that he was really, really active with his kicking, with his kicks. And just, his Thai style body kick with both legs, was able to score the, you know, big singles, the step up knees. I just thought that Simon Marcus put it all together. This is a good win for him. I'd wondered after this tournament if he'd be able to fight in San Diego, but it seems like it's already a go. He feels physically healthy and he wants to get right back in there, and he is going to fight on the San Diego card, and that's just awesome stuff. I'm really excited about that. I'm hoping that he is healthy, not just, you know, interested in fighting and being a combatant, but I'm hoping that he's going to be 100% when he gets ready to go against Artem Levin for the second time. Good stuff, Simon Marcus. I'm going to try to get a hold of him, get him on the podcast one time, because, and I'll say it to his face, I was wrong. You put on an absolutely wonderful show. You put it together this time, and I'm excited to see you go against Artem Levin. Going to go ahead and go into the Super Fight Series. Saulo Cavallari gets a split decision victory over Artem Vagadov, and I can't stress you enough, this fight is about what you like, because I really thought, first of all, they showed that they are two top five light heavyweight fighters in the world. They fought right in the pocket, they put on a great show, and Cavallari combinations really chopped the low kicks. Artem Vagadov, with the movement and the boxing from both stance. In round one, there's a period of time where Cavallari just committed to the low kicks and he scored a lot. I think he scored like four in a row at one period of time. And the reason why he scored them is because Artem was still looking for his opportunities with his hands. He got in the pocket, threw hands, landed clean. I thought that round one could have gone either way. I leaned towards Artem Vagadov. I thought that round two was Cavallari, if I'm remembering correctly, and that last round was a swing round, and I leaned towards Artem Vagadov. So when I saw Weingarten in favor of him, that made sense. But Cavallari could have definitely won three, and he could have definitely won one. You know, like, it was a close fight. It was what an elite fight supposed to be. The only thing that this fight was missing was two more rounds, because I think five rounds would have separated these elite athletes. I don't know who they're going to have fight for the title unless they get, you know, if they can convince Kokan Saki to come back, which I think they will be able to do. I'm really definitely hoping that they are. You got to do Cavallari right away, and you've got Artem Vagadov in the stables to hop in there for the next fight. But I'm definitely excited about it, and good stuff by both men. It was an awesome fight. It was a very close fight, pick'em fight, tough to judge, but I really enjoyed it. Mirab Buzidi gets a victory over Dustin Jacoby. And I mentioned before that, you know, I was worried that when Dustin Jacoby went out there, because he was posting pictures when he was in the, you know, Dubai with his wife and that kind of deal, I was like, has he seen it as a vacation? Has he been training? Is he going to go out there and then use, you know, Nicky Hemmers as his corner because of Robin Van Roosmalen and so on? I didn't know what was going to happen with it. But he definitely went out there with his team, you know, his team from, he had his guys from Denver. And, you know, one of them, Brian Foster, who fought in Glory before. And he went out there, and I think that he was game. He's looking for his opportunities. The only problem is Mirab Buzidi was more talented than he was. Mirab was able to score more effective with his combinations and the kicks, his movements, where he stood, how he knew to be in position to counter with the low kicks, how he knew to shut down Dustin Jacoby's offensive game. I thought Mirab Buzidi just did an awesome job. So, good win for him. Want to see more of him down the road, and definitely want to see more of him at light heavyweight. Both guys are kind of pretty close to 209, and they called it a heavyweight bout, but they're both light heavyweights, and I would see more from them down the road. And Dustin Jacoby, we mentioned before, if they got to get him some camps, because he does have the skill set to be good at this sport. He could be a good kickboxer. It just won't happen if you're kind of going MMA, going back to kickboxing. It's going to be tough if you do it that way. He needs some fights to kind of groom him as an athlete so that he can get better all the time, and then he can have the opportunity to win at the highest level. But so far, he's been on a skid in both kickboxing and MMA, and he's more talented than his, you know, record in the last few fights would represent. Chai Lewis Perry, I hope he enjoyed his trip to Dubai, because Jongsu Park offered absolutely no resistance. Park came out, threw a couple of kicks, switch kicks kind of toward the body, toward the head. Lewis stepped around after taking him, threw a combination of maybe four shots. Three of the four land, if not four or five landed, and that was it. Park was done, wasn't able to go. Suffering no injuries, ready to go right now if he wanted to. Chai Lewis Perry came out and had the kind of performance that you want to have, especially if you are the superior guy. If you get to Glory and the guy they announce you're going against has got a negative record to the tone of 2-8, but really it's probably something more like 8 and 30 because of his K1 run. You got to blow that guy out, and Chilos Parra did it. And he is a decently tall, I mean, he's a tall guy. He's shown me some skill. I want to see more of him down the road. You know, I joked last week just because of the nature of the fight, because if you're going to be the elite kickboxing organization in the world, Yongsoo Park can't be on your kickboxing card. It cannot happen. Now, I know the goal was to debut a Chilos Parra, but they can find a guy with a winning record that he can go in and blow out still. You can't have a Yongsoo Park in that role. With that said, Chilos Parra did his thing, and hopefully we'll see more of him down the road. Next up, middleweight bout, Bakudis, as they were saying it on the commentary, gets a victory over Mikhail Shalik. And here's the thing that I want to bring about the Mikhail Shalik fight or whatever. Samir did a good job of closing the distance, and he landed an awesome combo. It's a combo that I hold for my fighters all the time. He went low kick to hook cross. So as soon as the low kick scored, he came up strong with a 3-2. 3-2 scores clean, and the two drops Mikhail. Mikhail goes down. They go back to the center. Right hand scores clean. For some reason, Samir felt the desire to kind of, you know, laugh at Mikhail as he fell down. Second down scored. Sends the guy to the corner. Gives him the opportunity to get up. And here's where I can't get through a Glory card without saying something about their refs. Here's another ref complaint about the Glory promotion. Mikhail Shalik stood up, he put his gloves up, and he hung out, completely eyes cleared, stood in front of the ref for about 6 seconds of an 8-second count, and the ref called the fight off. What else are you supposed to do? What is the fighter supposed to do to prove that they are ready to go, other than stand up and be ready for you to restart the fight? I was wondering if maybe the ref misunderstood what the fight was supposed to be. By that, I meaning maybe he looked at it and he was thinking to himself, you know what? I really think I should make this fight, or excuse me, I think this fight might be a tournament fight. Maybe get lost in it because, you know, there was a middleweight tournament later. Maybe he was thinking, oh, there's only two downs in this. That way the, you know, winner can still move on into the tournament if something happens. That could have been the case, and I didn't know about it. But all I know is if it was a super fight, which is what it says it is or what they announced it as, if Samir Bakudis got the second down scored, he should have had to earn a third one if it was a regular super fight. He should not have been given the fight after two. Because if the judge, or excuse me, the ref's trying to make the argument that Mikhail Shalik was not conscious, if he wasn't coherent, he's wrong. He couldn't have looked more clear and ready to fight than he did in that picture. Next fight I'm going to talk about, welterweight. Chad Sugden gets a win over Oktan Arslan, and it comes down to this. Chad Sugden was more talented than Oktan Arslan. Arslan was game. He had his moments. He, you know, threw with power, definitely looked for his body kicks and so on. But the fight was all about Chad Sugden's skill set and his movement. Chad didn't have the power to hurt Adakan. Like, he didn't throw anything where I was like, Arslan's in trouble. Like nothing like that happened. But the one thing he did was every time Arslan went straight back, Sugden went straight after him. And he kept throwing in combos. He was scoring clean with the boxing. He would stand right in front of him, just use his subtle movements. I love Chad Sugden in kickboxing because he's got his own style and his own identity. I think he's going to be better at it at 154. Like, I would love his slickness against a guy like Robin Van Roosmaal. I'd love to see it. It's going to be tough for him to hold it up at welterweight. With that said, welterweight's probably a easier route to the title than 154. You know, lightweight's, that's a really tough division. A division that just got tougher if you by the last fight in the card I'm going to talk about. But I really like Chad Sugden's skill set. I love the timing of his teeps. At several times, Arslan would load up in low kicks, and he had just perfectly timed teep. A couple of them knocked Arslan down, not scored knockdowns, but knocked him down. A couple of them just wrecked his combination flow, made him restart. Sugden, I'm telling you, the head movement, the shoulders, the subtleties with his feet, he's what kickboxing needs, a guy who's got their own identity. We can't all be combination and kick guys, and I'm glad that we've kind of got away from that generation. We've got guys that are all their own. Anatoly Moiseev that I'm going to talk about, Max Mermal, you know, the First fight I talked about, Ruzmalin, Andy Risty, they're all different guys. They all have different styles about them. And I really like Chad Sugden's addition to the kickboxing world, and I want to see him fight more, either at welterweight or 154. But I think 154 is a better home for him because that way his firepower can show up a little bit more. Last fight on the card, mentioned it before, Anatoly Moiseev gets a KO victory over Max Bermel. Just established it. Max was looking for his combo flow, and Moiseev, he's known for putting the earmuffs up, moving around, and not necessarily throwing offense right away, being patient and looking for his opportunities. Kick comes in too high, too fast for Max, scores big, and that's all she wrote. Fight was pretty much over with before it started. Max still a very talented guy, but I'm really high on Anatoly. I can't wait to see him fight more. I hope at the end of the year that they do a big lightweight tournament. You know, I would love that. I would love for him to get the opportunity to fight a couple times in one night. Anything to get this guy shown to an audience on a regular basis, because he is very, very talented. All in all, I thought the kickboxing product, once again, did what it's supposed to do. It was an entertaining product. Everybody who watched it really enjoyed it. I'm looking at my Twitter feed as it was going on. I was cornering a fighter at the time, so I had to watch the fights when I got home, and I just kind of went down my Twitter feed to kind of get a feel of what was going on from you know, spectators, and everybody loved it. This fight, this particular card, everyone loved, and all the main cards were decision fights. So you know you put on a good show when you put on a whole bunch of decisions and everybody loves it. So everybody's doing their thing as far as kickboxing. They're putting on good shows. They're doing a good job with Glory. It's just we got to figure out the location part. You know, got to figure out where we're going to be to really grow this brand. And as it was mentioned before, they could have been trying to entice some investors, which means that it would have been positive that they would do the tape delay and then have the card take place out there. That's a positive if they attract this investor. But ideally, whether they do shows in the States, but really shows in Europe is what you got to do. And we talked about it before. They hit up Morocco. This would have been huge. You hit up Morocco, and even with a couple cards with guys in the undercard, they would have had a huge audience come out. Get Badahari, they'd have even huger audience come out. You really got to play to your fan base. In Dubai, they've got a lot of wealthy people. Got a lot of people who can financially afford to come watch it. But is it the thing that they wanted to do on that particular Friday night? Didn't seem like it was the case. No one in the card spoke to that local audience. The UFC brand, it in itself gets people to come out. And when I went out there last year with my fighter for the show that they had in Abu Dhabi, there was a decent crowd there, but it wasn't nothing crazy. And that's the UFC brand, you know what I'm saying? So Glory, I mean, it's I'd love it to, because Dubai does a lot of things just to have part of their culture of we have special events here, we have big events here, whatever. I think they did a good job of putting on a different, a decent production, but that just we just didn't have the audience. And I swear to you, if they were to do Glory Ireland, they'd do a huge crowd. You know what I'm saying? Like, just hit up England, hit up places where people want to come see your show. And I really think that that's got to be the next step for their brand. Go ahead and get us some news. The first chapter of Still Will's new Badahari documentary came out. You can check that out. It's on YouTube right now. It's literally called Chapter 1. You can go with The Golden Boy, Badahari, Badar documentary. It's good stuff. Just it's the flow to it. It's a combination of words that they've got from different people. What I mean by a combination of that are a comment here from Vinny Sherman, comment here from Badahari, and he's just kind of sitting there and they're explaining things, and he's talking about how he comes up. It's got some good footage from back when he first started. Good stuff. Still Will had talked about doing it before, so shout out to Still Will, who's done kickboxing highlights for a very long time. I'm glad that he's doing this. He's done small Badahari documentaries. He was in the locker room in the Leon show when Badar made his comeback win. So good stuff there. Definitely check that out. The Sonny Dalbec, Jordan Watson fight has emerged. Definitely check that out. That's awesome stuff. It's literally at the Yacau site, so you'll check that out for those of you who want to see how the Sonny Dalbec stoppage came about and the work that Jordan Watson had done beforehand. I mean, really, it's just, it's the reason why I think these guys should be fighting 3, 4, 5 times. That's what your career should be. I mean, it's an awesome fight, so definitely go check it out. One of my favorite fights of the year. And I wanted to I'll get into some of the results of them. I wasn't able to see all of the card that happened on Infusion, but I definitely want to talk about some of the names that have emerged as kind of regular players that some of you guys should be familiar with. And I'll start off with Norden Bin Ma, who gets a victory by TKO in the second round over... Excuse me, sorry, I had something in my throat. Paul Jensen. Norden Bin Ma is a guy who I really prefer, or Mo is a guy who's really talented. He's got a lot of KO pop. I think that they're doing a good job using him. I like him on their cards. I think that he does a good job, puts in a good show. Hafid El Bustadi, he gets a, you know, win over, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Edson Fortes of Cape Verde gets a win over Hafid El Bustadi. It's just, he's still talented. It's not that he's, you know, unskilled. It's just that this guy, his skill set hasn't held up. It hasn't continued. He's good. He could win certain guys for a while, but now he's getting older. A new generation of guys going to come, and they're going to give him trouble. That's just the nature of how things are always going to be. And then the other fight, Norden Bin Mo, he got a first-round TKO over Paul Jensen. And that was my apologies. I said second round. The second-round one was Walid Hamid of Morocco getting a second-round TKO over Denis Kabijic. And I think the last one of note I want to talk about, it's a big card. Norden Bin Mo ended up winning the tournament, for those who are wondering. So he'll move on and be in the tournament at the end of the year. He got a points victory over Fortis. That's something. This tournament, it was okay, but it didn't draw me in as much as what I was excited about. I was excited about the possibility of Muhammad Jiraiya going against Aziz Kala. That's what I was excited about this date. I almost made a highlight video for it. But instead, they want to have a tournament to kind of go throughout the months and then end the year on that note. Hopefully have those two meet at the end of the tournament. I like that idea because that does kind of groom and kind of put your kickboxing season in a direction. But you did have my hopes up. I did want to see it differently. And then I definitely give a shout out to Hashim Ashali, who got a TKO in round two over Bryce Gideon. That's a big win. So that means we should all be looking out for Hashim down the road. Going to go ahead and end the show on a sad note. Some of you guys, of course, have probably heard by now. We've had a death in the kickboxing family, and I'll never forget the first time I came across Sergey Lysenko. Basically, I don't have the details of what happened. All I know is that he was murdered, and after his murder, he left. He survived by a wife and 18-month-old child. I was first introduced to Sergey Lysenko because he had got into the K-1 tournament, and the K-1 tournament had Daniel Gita in it. I'd wanted Daniel Gita to get into K-1 for a really long time. Sergey Lysenko had gotten to that tournament field as well. So, of course, when I watched the tournament, I was all about Gita. I wasn't paying attention to the fact that Lysenko had anything to do with the card. I only cared about Gita because I knew that he was an elite athlete. But then as I did my research going into it, the forums online started to talk about, you know, on, you know, I want to say K1 fans had a write-up, and somebody was talking about how Lysenko had fought in a 5-man tournament the weekend before. So he fought in a different fight each day, and then he'd won or he'd lost the fight in like a extra round, you know, war on the fifth one. And then a week later, he's fighting in K1. I can't remember if he won. I think he won the fight. And that was kind of how I got introduced to him. I was like, okay, you know, who is this guy? And he goes into the tournament, and he is that type of action fighter. Definitely stays in the pocket, lets his hands go, not afraid of anybody. This guy fought Gita twice. He was stopped in that, you know, low kicks, and he had taken some damage before that. But he was stopped by Daniel Gita by low kicks in that first fight. But they continued to use him. And because they continued to use him, I continued to see good opportunities, good performances by him. He won the Super Combat Tournament. He won a King of Kings Grand Prix, but the level fighter wasn't that high. Super Combat, that one was a good tournament to win. And I was always excited. If he was on a card, I always attributed it immediately as a good card. And I remember seeing him in the gym when I went out and I was filming the kickboxing documentary. And he was brought out to Holland by Artur Kashenko, who was like, you know, hey, a friend of mine was looking for a place to train too. So he went out there and he trained. After he trained with Mike Passanier, he went and trained with Tom Harnick. It's heartbroken. I mean, I thought that he was 33 years old because I thought that he was in his early 20s when I first got introduced to him. And he was younger than that. He was only 27 years old, and that's just absolutely gut-wrenching. So prayers and thoughts go out to him and his family. I hope all is well. I hope that your loved ones are getting around you, your wife and your eight-month-old child, and I hope that your family is able to, you know, not necessarily fill your void, but definitely speak the truth of your life and the experiences that you had, because you really did emerge and have a really good career at a time where there are some pretty solid kickboxers. So, Sergey Lysenko, you are an awesome fighter. You are not necessarily the best as far as resume. You didn't get the big wins. You didn't have a K-1 World Grand Prix. You weren't a glory regular. But you got to fight the highest level. You got to travel the world. You got to be on cards and see places that you didn't think were possible. You had a good run, and we will definitely miss you in the kickboxing community. Everybody have a good one. Peace.